Are you a company commander that just received the guide on and is looking for a starting point to develop your unit's training plan? Do you want to take your unit's ability to train to the next level? Today, we provide a quick episode with simple, actionable steps that will empower you to execute an effective training management program. This is Leaders Huddle Podcast, episode number 3, 7 Fundamentals of an Effective Training Management Program. Welcome to the Leaders Huddle Podcast. Through this podcast, our goal is to educate and inspire the current generation of company career officers through advancing the discussion of leadership, professionalism, and building high-performing organizations. I am Captain David Wirt, your host. In the huddle with me today, I have Captain Guillermo Wandike and Captain Kyle Stillwell with me to discuss a quick and actionable list of 7 fundamentals to an effective training management program. Guillermo, an engineer officer commanding an engineer support company, is part of the 20th Engineer Brigade at Fort Bragg, whose training event highlights while in command include an airborne operation into Camp Atterbury, Indiana, to conduct a drop zone expansion at Bowden Drop Zone. Welcome to the show, Guillermo. How are you today?
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm doing good.
Kyle is an armor officer who served in Iraq as a tank platoon leader and then as an infantry platoon leader. After deploying his battalion to Afghanistan as an S-4, Kyle commanded the headquarters troop for a long-range surveillance squadron at Joint Base Lewis McChord. Kyle, how are you today, man?
Doing awesome. Thanks for having me, Dave.
You guys ready to jump into today's discussion?
Of course.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So, guys, we know that training builds confidence and competence while providing essential skills and knowledge resulting in unit readiness. Commanders are responsible for scheduling, resourcing, and executing training. With so much in a commander's plate, training management can become a beast to manage if not done systematically or done well. While there are many paths to a training management success, I'm interested to hear what you guys have to offer to our listening audience for those actionable techniques.
Yeah, so when we sat down and we started spitballing these ideas and we thought, what could we have done better or wish we would have known on day one of command or of staff time? So we took into account the doctrinal references and we looked to see what the Army says about training management. And that's an ADP 7-SO, which is Training Units Developing Leaders. So ADP 7-0. It's a quick read. It's about 28 pages, and that includes all the pictures. And we were just joking about how the guy on the cover, we're going to have to change him out in a couple of years because he's at ACU. And with the Army transitioning to OCP, I don't know how long that's going to last. ADRP 7.0, equally slim, only 40 pages. But really, we're looking at Chapter 3. And really, the bulk of the manual for ADP 7 is about 8 pages. So at about page of this manual, you have a pretty cool chart. It breaks down everything that, from how the Army fights and how it prepares to fight. I'm a visual learner, so this is easier for me to understand. I suggest you download the PDF, bring out the chart, put it on your wall, and then you can impress people when they walk into your office and you tell them that's how the Army fights. But in summary, it says this. Unified land operations is executed through decisive action, guided by mission command. And how we prepare for this is through roles of training and leader development, principles of training and leader development, and unit training management. And this is how we plan, prepare, execute, and assess training. On another table, it would be great to glance at these principles of unit training on page 5, but this podcast is about training management. We could definitely do a longer podcast on planning and executing training later. So what does ADP 7 say about training management? It starts with the mission essential task list, the MEDL, the doctrinal framework of fundamental tasks for which the unit was designed, which brings us to our first tip. Know your unit's mission and MEDL and get them approved. So basically, understand why your unit exists. The mission, the MEDL, DA standardizes MEDL for brigade and above. If you're a battalion or below, you have to create a MEDL that supports or is nested with your higher headquarter. Now here's something important to remember. There's a great difference between what your unit can do with unlimited resources and time and what it can do in the real world, or the world we live in right now, the physically constrained world. So along with understanding your MEDL is understanding your key collective tasks, or KCTs, that accomplishes your MEDL tasks. Mastery of the key collective tasks and supporting individual tasks prepares soldiers, leaders, units to adapt to changes in mission and condition. That's straight out of the ADP. So your company's MEDL supports the battalion's mission and then feeds into the battalion's MEDL. It's not 100%. Especially in a diverse battalion, there are many things your battalion does that your company is not able to support, and that's okay. But for every task your company does, there needs to be a purpose, whether it's in your mission or the battalion's mission.
So for the company commander out there just stepping into command, conducting a thorough medal review from the start and nesting it with your higher units medal provides the bulk of what that company should focus their training on. So our actionable step, ensure you get your current or proposed medal tasks, if you're going to change them, blessed off by your S3 and certainly your battalion commander. So this brings us to our next tip. Kyle, where can commanders out there find a list of approved medal tasks and key collective tasks for their specific type of units?
Thanks, Dave. Mostly you're going to find these on the Army Training Network and the Combined Arms Training Strategies off of that. You're going to want to use Army Training Network, or ATN, and the Combined Arms Training Strategies, CATS, to build your unit training plans. By now, you may be aware of what ATN and CATS have to offer, but if not, they offer the Leader's Guide to Unit Training Management that helps you walk the dog from your organization's Department of the Army standardized medal down to the individual skills required to accomplish them. Large unit medal tasks, like conduct an attack, are listed as task selections. Under these are a litany of collective tasks associated with them. So for conduct an attack, camouflage equipment and conduct an attack by fire are some of the many collective tasks. As Guillermo highlighted, key collective tasks are the tasks that a commander determines are the most critical to mission accomplishment. They're generally supported by other essential collective tasks. For each collective task, CATS and ATN offer training evaluation outlines, or TNEOs, that list the required leader tasks, individual tasks, and related collective tasks. CATS are task-based, event-oriented training strategies that are based on the missions, functions, and capabilities for which your units are designed. ATN and CATS show the associated training events to train each task. Whether classes, STICs, StaffX, or others, CATS provides the progressive training methodology and frequency to train each task. So at the end of the day, ATN and CATS have everything you need to understand the doctrine behind building quality training.
So if you guys haven't checked it out yet, the Army Training Network and CATS, they can become your best friends. Become familiar with these resources and show your subordinates how to use it. There's even a video on how to run a company training meeting on the Army Training Network. Okay, Guillermo, now that we've started to gather a few resources and done our homework, how do we go about managing the training calendar and the events that we really want to focus on for the coming fiscal year?
Yeah, so I suggest plan a year out, if not more. This kind of blew my mind when I first took a platoon because I could barely think of what I was going to do tomorrow, let alone 6 weeks out. But by the time I reached company command, I needed a year, if not 18 months, to really capture what I wanted to do and then build up to it. So my tip is do an annual planning conference or suggest one. And this is very helpful if you're stuck in S3. As either a lieutenant or a junior captain, this was one of my first crucibles, if you will. When I first got to S3 as a captain, my battalion commander said plan an annual training conference. And I really didn't understand what the benefit of it was until I saw one in action. So at the beginning of the fiscal year, your brigade will push out annual training guidance to be followed up and realigned every quarter right before the quarterly training briefs. The annual training guidance provides your battalion and your company with specific tasks to your unit to accomplish. Or for your unit to accomplish. Usually there's a culminating exercise, such as a JRTC or NTC rotation as a validation for the unit's readiness. When I took command, we had JRTC rotation right around the year mark. And then this can also be used for deployment. So you validate a JRTC NTC, and then you go into deployment. The key is to synchronize the battalion resources and training objectives in order to support brigade's intent. An annual planning conference can be done offsite. In fact, I suggest it be done offsite. That way your key leaders are fully engaged. They're not worried about what's going on because there's so many distractors back at the company, back at the battalion. Doing this offsite, we used the Family Readiness Center at Fort Bragg. Everyone was fully engaged with what was happening, and everybody was mentally prepared that this was the task they needed to accomplish. So start with a doctrinal review and update. This can be done by the S3. That way everybody's on the same language. Everyone knows how we're going to speak about training, and then what references we're going to use. And then the second thing is each staff section briefs how to use them. How do you use S1? How do you use S2? How do you draw COMSEC? How do you do personnel actions, security briefs, ammo and land requests? That way every company knows when they go to S3 who to talk to when they're doing ammo requests, land requests, and the information is just being passed on a lot quicker. Then finally, you lay out resources available for year. This includes ammo, land, and especially money. If you're going to plan a live fire exercise at the end of the fiscal year, you need to know how much ammo allocation is throughout the year, not just for your company, but what other companies in the battalion are using ammo. So you don't get to the end of the year and you plan out a live fire exercise, you find out there's not enough ammo, right? So then, finally, you brief the battalion training exercises and brigade exercises. How do we work upon them? You can't get to a live fire exercise at the squad level without doing several steps along the way. You have to train at the individual, you have to train at the team level before you can go to squad. Lay those out, make sure that you're validating each one before you progress to the next one. Your brigade commander's going to want to know that when you brief them at the quarterly training briefs. At the end of the annual planning conference, usually the companies outbrief their training plan and how it's nested with the brigade and battalion. This is done with a sort of a review of the medal and the mission.
So Guillermo, you mentioned it, but I'd like you to elaborate a little more. For those listeners out there, if their higher headquarters is not a system like an annual training conference, what is a company commander to do?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we had a company that we supported that was actually, their company was at Fort Bragg, but their battalion was at Fort Eustis. So they weren't set up in a way that they could just go to the battalion and do an annual planning conference. The biggest thing here is follow the same steps, but don't do it at the company. A lot of distractors, as I mentioned earlier, exist at the company. Take them off-site and get all your leaders engaged, get all your key leaders in the same room with the same objectives, lay out the task and what the end state is going to be. You're going to plan out a year what you're going to do and how you're going to get there, and then what resources you have to leverage against that training.
All right, so action step number 3, conduct a focused off-site or battalion-wide training conference with all your key leaders that have a stake in your company's training plan. So Kyle, speak to us about prioritizing training and intentionally protecting your training calendar.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. So fundamental number 4 is to prioritize and schedule what's important to you and the success of your company. Now, how this is different from what Guillermo was just talking about, when you're in the training conference, you're going to put together all your big training events that you want to have on there. But often what's lost are your counseling days and other developmental opportunities, the things that are generally done with white space on the calendar. Leaders must schedule what's important to them and create reaction time in their training calendars. Many leaders say that leader development is important to them, but then they wind up running out of time for quality counseling. If leaders put counseling days, LPDs, and inspections of leader books on the training calendar, then they're going to happen. If it's not on the calendar, it'll be the first to be sacrificed when taskings come up. Similarly, short notice taskings and mandatory training events can be minimized but not eliminated. Leaders can be frustrated by it, or they can plan for it and protect what matters to them. Many units will achieve this by having a battle rhythm event of unit standards day. A way that I've seen is to have a sort of a payday activities format with an ASU inspection or an OCIE inspection, followed by an LPD series at Echelon. When I've seen this in the past, these events have created genuine value, but they could also be shortened or lengthened as required. This creates an opportunity for you to be able to react at your own level. It also creates an opportunity to have a dialogue with higher level leadership to allow you to reschedule around knee-jerk training requirements in those time slots and protect scheduled and resource-intensive training.
So protecting the training calendar is a universal struggle I think most commanders face. I can't tell you guys how many times I had to reschedule quarterly or monthly counselings with my lieutenants because other events popped up. And it was really frustrating that I wasn't able to get after a lot of things that I cared about, like leader development, because my training schedule was dictated by other stuff. So this brings up action step number 4. Try and put what you care about on your training calendar outside of your mandatory and medal training, and be intentional about it. Protect that white space so you can help grow your organization. That leads us to our next point. Guillermo, you have a recommendation that is on the topic of writing and publishing orders.
I do, and let me caveat, I hate writing orders. We might lose some visitors, we might lose some listeners, because I just said that the next step is to write orders, but I hate writing orders. Every time I write one, I feel like I have to relearn how to write one. but I learned that people never want to do anything unless it's in the order. And I know we can't have the... But I learned that people never want to do anything unless it's in the order, or will reference the order when you forget to do something. So use the order to your advantage. As a company commander, if you're doing an exercise, put it in the order. This may be cumbersome if you decide to write an order each time you do mortar stables, but if there's an airborne operation with follow-on training, write it out. Make sure everyone has a copy and understands their role when they hit the ground. The mission command philosophy is to exercise authority and direction using mission orders to enable disciplined initiative within the commander's intent to empower agile and adaptive leaders. This is the way we develop subordinates and empower them to make decisions based on the intent and end state you lay out in your orders. But they won't know that unless you write them down. When we look at the principles of mission command, build cohesive teams through mutual trust, create shared understanding, provide a clear commander's intent, exercise disciplined initiative, use mission orders, accept prudent risk. We see that there must be a trust between the commander and his or her leaders to accomplish the mission. Without telling them exactly how you want it done, your orders process and training plan should enable, not direct them. Your focus, according to ADP 6SO, is on the mission objectives. Achieving those objectives is the job of your subordinates, but they need to know what they are. It needs to be on paper.
So you're recommending not only briefing the op order or warning order or frago, whatever you want to call it, for the training event, but making sure your subordinate leaders keep a copy on them at the event as a guide, but not the prescription?
Exactly. A lot of people fail to write it down. They fail to write an op order because they just think that everybody knows the commander's intent and what the objectives are. Purposely and deliberately write an operations order. Make sure that everybody knows the specified and implied tasks. What's the follow-on plan? What's the pace plan? This is crucial during an operation when you can reference it and everybody knows what their next follow-on mission is.
So I think just as important as writing an order is vetting it through the staff as a means to resource your training and protect your training time. Basically, so the staff knows that you're going to be out in the field and they're expected to provide you the resources, and they can even come out and see the training if they want to. So that brings us to our action step number 5. Take the time to write, publish an order, and ensure that your subordinates know it. So Kyle, training management is a system, not a means to conduct a singular event. I see for Fundamental 6, you suggest adopting a model. Can you elaborate?
Yeah, exactly, Dave. Along the same lines as what Guillermo was saying, if you want well-planned and resourced training, you need to adopt a training model and rigorously enforce its execution. Whether you choose the troop leading procedures or the 8 steps training model, each provides a structure for your junior leaders to follow. By providing this structure, you can create a high standard and predictability. It'll also create a common operating language and help to hold leaders accountable for their performance in the process. It's a simple yet effective method for making your training better.
Kyle, that's great. As a reminder for the listeners, the 8-step training model is so simple to follow as a guide, and you can always add to it. One of my battalion commanders liked to add 2 additional steps to that model. The first was asking, why are we doing this training event, which was mentioned as our first point. And the second additional step at the end was conducting a thorough reset and refit, which I'm sure you can appreciate as a armor cav guy. And that metaphor was pony, saddle, self, focusing on vehicles, your kit, and your soldiers. And that includes making sure that your 598s are done, you maintain your kit, you're conducting your inventories, and then you follow up with giving your soldiers some time off, time with their families, and making sure that awards are written. All right, guys, for the last fundamental, you highlight here utilizing external resources at your own installation.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. You really got to get to know the resources around you. This is twofold. First, almost every installation has a training aids, devices, simulators, and simulations department, also known as TADS. Here you're going to find everything you need to enhance your training. They often have miles gear, simunitions or paintball, land navigation training aids, etc. Our unit even drew an air-powered 50 cal simulator and a propane-powered IED simulator that rocked your world when it went off. Range control is another great resource for going above and beyond with training. They've got all the old CONOPs for training and can help you to design training that takes it to the next level. Why reinvent the wheel? The point is, have your leaders get familiar with the training aids and resources that are available so that you can plan it into your training early. The other part is, you really got to get to know who else you can train with. From special operations to reservists, units around you are often willing to conduct multi-compositional training. Training with diverse organizations can bring a diverse set of resources and new approaches to a mission. Understanding how they plan, train, and fight creates quality developmental opportunities and institutional knowledge for future fights. It also teaches your leaders to think outside the box and communicate across perceived cultural boundaries.
So Kyle, that last point sort of highlights the Army's move to the total force concept, where National Guard and Reserve units are aligned with active component units. And while I haven't been in a unit that's done that yet, I'm willing to see how that plays out. So on your point of tapping into resources at your installation, I would also recommend looking at Army Community Service agencies and other directorates such as CID and Safety Officer, the Staff Safety Officer Also, on your point of tapping into the resources at your installation, I would recommend looking at what the Army Community Service and other directorates such as CID and the Installation Safety Officer can provide in terms of assisting completing your annual 350-1 training. So action step number 7, tap into local resources. All right, guys, in recap, the 7 essential fundamentals and associated action steps are: know your company's mission and mental tasks, utilize the Army Training Network and Combined Arms Training Strategy as a guide for planning your metal and key collective task training, plan a year out using annual training conference or some other form of an offsite event that can get your core team focused on training, prioritize and schedule what is important to you and the success of your company, use the order systems as a forcing function, adopt a training model, utilize and leverage local resources available to you. Guillermo and Kyle, I want to thank you today for coming on the Leaders Huddle podcast. You guys are welcome back anytime. Got anything in closing for our listeners?
No, thanks for having us, Dave. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us, Dave.
All right. This wraps up today's Leaders Huddle podcast. In our next show, we explore the topic of standing up a company from complete scratch. Until next time, remember, elevating your performance and unleashing your potential as a leader takes intentionality and the humility to learn from others. The views expressed in the Leaders Huddle podcast are the opinions of the hosts and guests. The discussion shared here does not represent the official position of the United States Military Academy or the U.S. Army.